This is Audible.
And now part two of Throne of Glass, written by Sarah J. Maas and read by Elizabeth Evans. Chapter 27. Late that afternoon, Selena stared at the ebony clock tower. It grew darker and darker, as if it somehow absorbed the sun's dying rays. On top of it, the gargoyles remained stationary. They hadn't moved, not even a finger. The guardians, Elena had called them. But guardians to what? They'd scared Elena enough to keep her away. Surely, if they'd been the evil Elena mentioned, she would have just said it outright. Not that Selena was considering looking for it right now. Not when it could get her into trouble, and somehow wind up killing her before she could even become the king's champion. Still, why did Elena have to be so oblique about everything? "What's your obsession with these ugly things?" Nehemia asked from beside her. Selena turned to the princess. "Do you think they move?" "They're made of stone, Lillian," the princess said in the common tongue, her Ilwe accent slightly less thick.
"Oh!" Selena exclaimed, smiling. "That was very good! One lesson and you're already putting me to shame."
Unfortunately, the same couldn't be said of Selena's Ilwe. Nehemia beamed. "They do look wicked," she said in Ilwe. "And I'm afraid the word marks don't help," Selena said. A word mark was at her feet, and she glanced to the others. There were 12 of them altogether, forming a large circle around the solitary tower. She hadn't the faintest idea what any of it meant. None of the marks here matched the 3 she'd spotted at Xavier's murder site, but there had to be some connection.
"So you truly can't read these?" she asked her friend.
"No," Nehemia said curtly, and headed toward the hedges that bordered the courtyard. "And you shouldn't try to discover what they say," she added over her shoulder. "Nothing good will come of it."
Selena pulled her cloak tighter around her as she followed the princess.
Snow would start falling in a matter of days, bringing them closer to Yulmas and the final duel, still 2 months away. She savored the heat from her cloak, remembering all too well the winter she'd spent in Endovir. Winter was unforgiving when you lived in the shadow of the Rune Mountains. It was a miracle she hadn't gotten frostbite. If she went back, another winter might kill her.
"You look troubled," Nehemia said when Selena reached her side and put a hand on her arm.
"I'm fine," Selena said in Ilwe, smiling for Nehemia's sake. "I don't like winter."
"I've never seen snow," Nehemia said, looking at the sky. "I wonder how long the novelty will last."
"Hopefully long enough for you to not mind the drafty corridors, freezing mornings, and days without sunshine." Nehemia laughed.
"You should come to Ilwe with me when I return, and make sure you stay long enough to experience one of our blistering summers. Then you'll appreciate your freezing mornings and days without sun."
Selena had already spent one blistering summer in the heat of the Red Desert, but to tell Nehemia that would only invite difficult questions. Instead, she said,
"I'd like to see Ilwe very much."
Nehemia's gaze lingered on Selena's brow for a moment, before she grinned.
"Then it shall be so."
Selena's eyes brightened, and she tilted her head back so she could see the castle looming above them.
"I wonder if Kaol sorted through the mess of that murder."
"My bodyguards tell me that the man was very violently killed."
"To say the least,"
Selena murmured, watching the shifting colors of the fading sun turn the castle gold and red and blue. Despite the ostentatious nature of the castle, she had to admit that it did look rather beautiful at times.
"You saw the body?"
"My guards weren't allowed close enough."
She nodded. "I'm sure you don't want to know the details."
"Indulge me,"
Nehemia pressed, smiling tightly. Selena raised an eyebrow.
"Well, there was blood smeared everywhere. On the walls, on the floor."
"Smeared,"
Nehemia said, her voice dropping into a hush.
"Not splattered?"
"I think so.
like someone had rubbed it on there. There were a few of those word marks painted, but most had been rubbed away.
She shook her head at the image that arose.
And the man's body was missing its vital organs, like someone had split him open from neck to navel, and...
"I'm sorry, you look like you're going to be ill. I shouldn't have said anything."
"No. Keep going. What else was missing?"
Selena paused for a moment before saying,
"His brain. Someone had made a hole in the top of his head, and his brain was gone. And the skin from his face had been ripped off."
Nehemia nodded, staring at a barren bush in front of them. The princess chewed on her bottom lip, and Selena noted that her fingers curled and uncurled at the sides of her long white gown. A cold breeze blew past them, making Nehemia's multitude of fine, thin braids sway. The gold woven into her braids clinked softly.
"I'm sorry," Selena said. "I shouldn't have..."
A step fell behind them, and before Selena could whirl, a male voice said,
"Look at this."
She tensed as Cain came to stand nearby, half hidden in the shadow of the clock tower behind them. Varin, the curly-haired, loud-mouthed thief, was at his side.
"What do you want?" she said.
Cain's tan face twisted in a sneer. Somehow he'd gotten bigger, or maybe her eyes were playing tricks on her.
"Pretending to be a lady doesn't mean you are one," he said.
Selena shot Nehemia a look, but the princess's eyes remained upon Cain, narrowed, but her lips strangely slack. But Cain wasn't done, and his attention shifted to Nehemia. His lips pulled back, revealing his gleaming white teeth.
"Neither does wearing a crown make you a real princess. Not anymore."
Selena took a step closer to him.
"Shut your stupid mouth or I'll punch your teeth down your throat and shut it for you."
Cain let out a sharp laugh, which Varin echoed. The thief circled behind them, and Selena straightened, wondering if they'd actually pick a fight here.
"Lots of barking from the prince's lapdog," Cain said.
"But does she have any fangs?"
She felt Nehemia's hand on her shoulder, but she shrugged it off as she took another step toward him, close enough for the curls of his breath to touch her face. Inside the castle, the guards remained loitering about, talking amongst themselves.
"You'll find out when my fangs are buried in your neck," she said.
"Why not right now?"
Cain breathed.
"Come on, hit me. Hit me with all that rage you feel every time you force yourself to miss the bullseye, or when you slow yourself down so you don't scale walls as fast as me. Hit me, Lillian."
He whispered so only she could hear.
"And let's see what that year in Andovier really taught you."
Selena's heart leapt into a gallop.
He knew.
He knew who she was and what she was doing. She didn't dare to look at Nehemia, and only hoped her understanding of the common language was still weak enough for her not to have understood. Varin still watched from behind them.
"You think you're the only one whose sponsor is willing to do anything to win? You think your prince and captain are the only ones who know what you are?"
Selena clenched her hand. Two blows and he'd be on the ground, struggling to breathe. Another blow after that, and Varin would be beside him.
"Lillian?"
Nehemia said in the common tongue, taking her by the hand.
"We have business. Let us go."
"That's right," Cain said. "Follow her around like the lapdog you are."
Selena's hand trembled. If she got into a brawl right here and the guards had to pull them apart, Kaol might not let her see Nehemia again, let alone leave her rooms after lessons, or stay late to practice with Nox. So Selena smiled and rolled her shoulders as she said brightly,
"Shove it up your ass, Cain."
Cain and Varin laughed, but she and Nehemia walked away, the princess holding her hand tightly. Not from fear or anger, but just to tell her that she understood, that she was there. Selena squeezed her hand back. It had been a while since someone had looked out for her, and Selena had the feeling she could get used to it.
Kaol stood with Dorian in the shadows atop the mezzanine, staring down at the assassin as she punched at the dummy situated in the center of the floor. She'd sent him a message saying she was going to train for a few hours after dinner, and he'd invited Dorian to come along to watch. Perhaps Dorian would now see why she was such a threat to him, to everyone. Selena grunted, throwing punch after punch, left, right, left, left, right, on and on, as if she had something burning inside of her that she couldn't quite get out. "She looks stronger than before," the prince said quietly. "You've done a good job getting her back in shape." Selena punched and kicked at the dummy, dodging invisible blows. The guards at the door just watched, their faces impassive. "Do you think she stands a chance against Cain?" Selena swung her leg through the air, connecting with the dummy's head. It rocked back. The blow would have knocked out a man. "I think if she doesn't get too riled and keeps a cool head when they duel, she might. But she's wild and unpredictable. She needs to learn to control her feelings, especially that impossible anger." Which was true. Kaol didn't know if it was because of Endovir, or just being an assassin. Whatever the cause of that unyielding rage, she could never entirely leash herself. "Who's that?" Dorian asked sharply, as Nox entered the room and walked over to Selena. She paused, rubbing her rapt knuckles, and wiped the sweat from her eyes as she waved to him. "Nox," Kaol said. "A thief from Perinth. Minister Jovel's champion." Nox said something to Selena that set her chuckling. Nox laughed, too. "She made another friend?" Dorian said, raising his brows as Selena demonstrated a move for Nox.
"She's helping him?"
"Every day.
They usually stay after lessons with the others are over."
"And you allow this?" Kaol hid his glower at Dorian's tone.
"If you want me to put an end to it, I will."
Dorian watched them for another moment. "No. Let her train with him. The other champions are brutes. She could use an ally."
"That she could."
Dorian turned from the balcony and strode off into the darkness of the hall beyond. Kaol watched the prince disappear, his red cape billowing behind him, and sighed. He knew jealousy when he saw it, and while Dorian was clever, he was just as bad as Selena at hiding his emotions. Perhaps bringing the prince along had done the opposite of what he'd intended. His feet heavy, Kaol followed after the prince, hoping Dorian wasn't about to drag them all into serious trouble. A few days later, Selena turned to the crisp yellow pages of a heavy tome, squirming in her seat. Like the countless others she'd tried, it was just page after page of scribbled nonsense. But it was worth researching if there were word marks at Xavier's crime scene and word marks at the clock tower. The more she knew about what this killer wanted, why and how he was killing, the better. That was the real threat to be dealing with, not some mysterious, inexplicable evil Elena had mentioned. Of course, there was little to nothing to be found. Her eyes sore, the assassin looked up from the book and sighed. The library was gloomy, and were it not for the sound of Kaol flipping pages, it would have been wholly silent.
"Done?"
he asked, closing the novel he was reading. She hadn't told him about Cain revealing that he knew who she really was, or the possible murder connection to the word marks. Not yet. Inside the library, she didn't have to think about competitions and brutes. Here she could savor the quiet and the calm. "No," she grumbled, drumming her fingers on the table.
"This is actually how you spend your spare time?"
A hint of a smile appeared on his lips.
"You should hope no one else hears about this. It would ruin your reputation. Nox would leave you for Cain."
He chuckled to himself and opened his book again, leaning back in his chair. She stared at him for a moment, wondering if he'd stop laughing at her if he knew what she was researching, how it might help him, too. Selena straightened in her chair, rubbing a nasty bruise on her leg. Naturally, it was from an intentional blow of Kaol's wooden staff.
She glared at him, but he continued reading. He was merciless during their lessons. He had her doing all sorts of activities, walking on her hands, juggling blades. It wasn't anything new, but it was unpleasant. But his temper had improved somewhat. He did seem a bit sorry for hitting her leg so hard. Selena supposed she liked him. The assassin slammed shut the tome, dust flying into the air. It was pointless.
"What?"
he asked, straightening. "Nothing," she grumbled. What were word marks, and where did they come from? And more importantly, why had she never heard of them before? They'd been all over Elena's tomb, too. An ancient religion from a forgotten time. What were they doing here, and at the crime scene? There had to be a connection. So far, she hadn't learned much. According to one book, word marks were an alphabet. Though according to this book, no grammar existed with the word marks. Everything was just symbols that one had to string together. And they changed meaning depending on the marks around them. They were painfully difficult to draw. They required precise lengths and angles, or they became something else entirely.
"Stop glowering and sulking," Kael chided.
He looked at the title of the book. Neither of them had mentioned Xavier's murder, and she'd gleaned no more information about it.
"Remind me what you're reading?"
"Nothing," she said again, covering the book with her arms. But his brown eyes narrowed farther, and she sighed. "It's just about word marks. Those sundial things by the clock tower. I was interested, so I started learning about them."
A half-truth, at least.
She waited for the sneer and sarcasm, but it didn't come. He only said,
"And? Why the frustration?"
She looked at the ceiling, pouting. "All I can find is just radical and outlandish theories. I never knew any of this. Why? Some books claim the word is the force that holds together and governs Aurelia. And not just Aurelia, countless other worlds, too."
"I've heard of it before,"
he said, picking up his book, but his eyes remained fixed on her face.
"I always thought the word was an old term for fate, or destiny."
"So did I, but the word isn't a religion, at least not in the northern parts of the continent, and it's not included in the worship of the goddess or the gods." He set his book in his lap.
"Is there a point to this, beyond your obsession with those marks in the garden? Are you that bored?"
"Worried for my safety is more like it." "No. Yes. It's interesting. Some theories suggest the Mother Goddess is just a spirit from one of these other worlds, and that she strayed through something called a word gate and found Aurelia in need of form and life."
"That sounds a little sacrilegious,"
he warned. He was old enough to more vividly recall the burnings and executions 10 years ago. What had it been like to grow up in the shadow of the king who had ordered so much destruction? To have lived here when royal families were slaughtered, when seers and magic wielders were burned alive, and the world fell into darkness and sorrow. But she went on, needing to dump the contents of her mind in case all the pieces somehow assembled by speaking them aloud. "There's an idea that before the goddess arrived, there was life, an ancient civilization, but somehow, they disappeared. Perhaps through that word gate thing. Ruins exist, ruins too old to be a fey-making."
How this was connected to the Champion murders was beyond her. She was definitely grasping at straws.
He set his feet down and put the book on the table.
"Can I be honest with you?"
Kael leaned closer, and Selena leaned to meet him as he whispered,
"You sound like a raving lunatic."
Selena made a disgusted noise and sat back, seething. "Sorry for having some interest in the history of our world."
"As you said, these sound like radical and outlandish theories."
He started reading once more, and said without looking at her,
"Again, why the frustration?"
She rubbed her eyes. "Because," she said, almost whining, "because I just want a straightforward answer to what the word marks are, and why they're in the garden here of all places."
Magic had been wiped away on the king's orders, so why had something like the word marks been allowed to remain? To have them show up at the murder scene meant something.
"You should find another way to occupy your time," he said, returning to his book.
Usually guards watched her in the library for hours on end, day after day. What was he doing here? She smiled, her heart skipping a beat, and then looked at the books on the table. She ran again through the information she'd gathered. There was also the idea of the word gates, which appeared numerous times alongside the mention of word marks, but she'd never heard of them. When she'd first stumbled across the notion of word gates days ago, it had seemed interesting, and so she'd researched, digging through piles of old parchment, only to find more puzzling theories. The gates were both real and invisible things. Humans could not see them, but they could be summoned and accessed using the word marks. They opened into other realms, some of them good, some of them bad. Things could come through from the other side and slither into Aurelia. It was due to this that many of the strange and fell creatures of Aurelia existed. Selena pulled another book toward her and grinned. It was as if someone had read her mind. It was a large black volume entitled The Walking Dead in tarnished silver letters. Thankfully, the captain didn't see the title before she opened it, but she didn't remember selecting this from the shelves. It reeked, almost like soil, and Selena's nose crinkled as she turned the pages. She scanned for any sign of the word marks, or any mention of a word gate, but she soon found something far more interesting. An illustration of a twisted, half-decayed face grinned at her, flesh falling from its bones. The air chilled, and Selena rubbed her arms. Where had she found this? How had this escaped the burnings? How had any of these books escaped the purging fires 10 years ago? She shivered again, almost twitching. The hollow, mad eyes of the monster were full of malice. It seemed to look at her. She closed the book and pushed it to the end of the table. If the king knew this kind of book still existed in his library, he'd have it all destroyed. Unlike the great library of Orinth, here there were no master scholars to protect the invaluable books. Kaol kept reading. Something groaned, and Selena's head swung toward the back of the library. It was a guttural noise, an animalistic noise. "Did you hear anything?" she asked.
"When do you plan on leaving?" was his only reply.
"When I grow tired of reading." She pulled the black book back to her, leaped past the terrifying portrait of the dead thing, and drew the candle closer to read the descriptions of various monsters. There was a scraping noise somewhere beneath her feet. Close, as if someone were running a fingernail along the ceiling below. Selena slammed the book shut and stepped away from the table. The hair on her arms rose, and she almost stumbled into the nearest table as she waited for something. A hand, a wing, a gaping, fanged mouth to appear and grab her. "Do you feel that?" she asked Kaol, who slowly, maliciously grinned. He held out his dagger and dragged it on the marble floor, creating the exact sound and feeling. "Damned idiot!" she snarled. She grabbed two heavy books from the table and stalked from the library, making sure to leave The Walking Dead far behind. Chapter 28. Brows narrowed, Selena aimed the cue at the white ball. The pole slid easily between her fingers as she steadied her hand on the felt surface of the table. With an awkward lurch of her arm, she jabbed the rod forward. She missed completely. Cursing, Selena tried again. She hit the cue ball in such a way that it gave a pathetic half-roll to the side, gently knocking into a colored ball with a faint click. Well, at least she'd hit something. It was more successful than her research on the word marks had been. It was past 10, and, in need of a break from hours of training and researching and fretting about Kane and Elena, she'd come into the gaming room. She was too tired for music. She couldn't play cards alone, and, well,
Billiards seemed to be the only plausible activity. She picked up the cue with high hopes that the game wouldn't be too difficult to learn. The assassin pivoted around the table and took aim again. She missed. Gritting her teeth, she considered snapping the cue in half across her knee. But she'd been attempting to play for only an hour. She'd be incredible by midnight. She'd master this ridiculous game or she'd turn the table into firewood and use it to burn Cain alive. Selena jabbed the cue and hit the ball with such force that it zoomed toward the back wall of the table, knocking three colored balls out of its way before it collided with the number three ball, sending it shooting straight for a hole. It stopped rolling at the edge of the pocket. A shriek of rage ripped from her throat, and Selena ran over to the pocket. She first screamed at the ball, then took the cue in her hands and bit down upon the shaft, still screaming through her clamped teeth. Finally, the assassin stopped and slapped the three ball into the pocket. "For the world's greatest assassin, this is pathetic," said Dorian, stepping from the doorway. She yelped and swung toward him. She wore a tunic and pants, and her hair was unbound. He leaned against the table, smiling as she turned a deep shade of red. "If you're going to insult me, you can shove this..." She lifted the cue in the air and made an obscene gesture that finished her sentence. He rolled his sleeves before picking up a cue from the rack on the wall. "Are you planning on biting the cue again? Because if you are, I'd like to invite the court painter so I can forever remember the sight." "Don't you dare mock me!"
"Don't be so serious."
He aimed at the ball and sent it gracefully into a green one, which dropped into a pocket.
"You're immensely entertaining when you're hopping mad."
To his surprise and delight, she laughed. "Funny to you," she said. "Infuriating for me." She moved and took another shot, and missed.
"Let me show you how to do it."
He strode over to where she stood and set his stick down, taking hers in his hand, nudging her out of the way. His heart beat a bit faster. He positioned himself where she stood.
"You see how my thumb and index finger are always holding the upper end of the cue? All you have to do is..."
She knocked him out of the way with a swish of her hips and took the rod from him. "I know how to hold it, you buffoon!" She tried to hit the ball and missed yet again.
"You're not moving your body the correct way. Here, just let me show you."
Though it was the oldest and most shameless trick in the book, he reached over her and put his hand on top of the one that gripped the cue. He then positioned the fingers of her other hand on the wood before lightly gripping her wrist. To Dorian's dismay, his face became warm. His eyes shifted to her, and to his relief, he found that she was as red as he, if not more so. "If you don't stop feeling and start instructing, I'm going to rip out your eyes and replace them with these billiard balls."
"Look, all you have to do is..."
He walked her through the steps, and she hit the ball smoothly. It went into a corner and rebounded into a pocket. He removed himself from her and smirked.
"See, if you do it properly, it'll work. Try again."
He picked up his cue. She snorted, but still positioned herself, aimed, and hit it. The cue ball shot all around the table, creating general chaos, but at least she made contact. He grabbed the triangle and held it in the air.
"Care for a game?"
The clock struck two before they stopped. He had ordered an array of desserts to be brought in the midst of their playing, and though she protested, she gobbled down a large piece of chocolate cake, and then ate half of his piece, too. He won every game, yet she hardly noticed. As long as she hit the ball, it resulted in shameless bragging. When she missed, well, even the fires of hell couldn't compare to the rage that burst from her mouth. He couldn't remember a time when he'd laughed so hard. When she wasn't cursing and sputtering, they spoke of the books they'd both read. And as she jabbered on, he felt as if she hadn't spoken a word in years and was afraid she'd suddenly go mute again. She was frighteningly smart,
She understood him when he spoke of history or of politics, though she claimed to loathe the subject, and even had a great deal to say about the theater. He somehow wound up promising to take her to a play after the competition. An awkward silence arose at that, but it quickly passed. Dorian was slumped in an armchair, resting his head on a hand. She lay sprawled across the chair facing his, her legs dangling off an arm. She stared at the fire, her eyelids half closed.
"What are you thinking?" he asked.
"I don't know," she said. She let her head drop onto the arm of the chair. "Do you think Xavier and the other champion murders were intentional?"
"Perhaps. Does it make a difference?"
"No."
She lazily waved her hand in the air.
"Never mind."
Before he could ask more, she fell asleep.
He wished he knew more about her past. Kaol had only told him that she came from Terrasen, and that her family was dead. He hadn't the faintest clue what her life was like, how she became an assassin, how she learned to play the pianoforte. It was all a mystery. He wanted to know everything about her. He wished she'd just tell him. Dorian stood and stretched. He placed their cues on the rack, arranged the balls, and returned to the slumbering assassin. He shook her gently, and she groaned in protest.
"You may want to sleep there, but you'll sorely regret it in the morning."
Barely opening her eyes, she stood and shuffled to the door. When she nearly walked into the doorpost, he decided that a guiding arm was needed before she broke something. Trying not to think of the warmth of her skin beneath his hand, he directed her to her bedroom and watched her stagger into bed, where she collapsed on top of the blankets. "Your books are there," she mumbled, pointing at a stack by her bed. He slowly entered the chamber. She lay still, her eyes closed. Three candles burned on various surfaces. With a sigh, he moved to blow them out before approaching her bed. Was she sleeping?
"Good night, Selena," he said.
It was the first time he'd addressed her by her name. It came off his tongue nicely. She mumbled something that sounded like, "Nah," and did not move. A curious necklace glittered in the hollow of her throat. He felt as if it were familiar somehow, like he'd seen it before. With a final glance, he picked up the stack of books and left the room. If she became his father's champion and later gained her freedom, would she remain the same? Or was this all a facade to get what she wanted? But he couldn't imagine that she was pretending, didn't want to imagine that she was pretending. The castle was silent and dark as he walked back to his room. Chapter 29. At their test the next afternoon, Selena stood in the training hall with her arms crossed, watching Kane spar with Grave. Kane knew who she was. All of her simpering and pretending and holding back had been for nothing. It had amused him. She clenched her jaw as Kane and Grave flew across the sparring ring, swords clanging. The test was fairly simple. They were each given a sparring partner, and if they won their duel, they needn't worry about being eliminated. The losers, however, would face judgment by Brullo. Whoever had performed the worst would be sent packing. To his credit, Grave held up well against Kane, even though she saw how his knees trembled from the effort. Knox, standing beside her, hissed as Kane shoved into Grave and sent him staggering back. Kane smiled throughout the entire thing, barely panting. Selena clenched her hand into fists, pushing them hard against her ribs. In a flash of steel, Kane had his blade at Grave's throat, and the pockmarked assassin bared his rotting teeth at him.
"Excellent, Kane," Brullo said, clapping.
Selena struggled to control her breathing.
"Look out, Kane," Varin said from beside her.
The curly-headed thief grinned at her. She hadn't been thrilled when it had been announced she was to spar against Varin, but at least it wasn't Nox.
Little lady wants a piece of you.
Watch yourself, Varen, Nox warned, his gray eyes burning.
What?
Varen said. Now the other champions, and everyone else, were turning to them. Paylor, who had been lingering nearby, retreated a few steps.
Smart move. Defending her, are you?
Varen taunted.
Is that the bargain? She opens her legs and you keep an eye on her during practice?
Shut your mouth, you damned pig! Selena snapped. Kaol and Dorian pushed off from where they both leaned against the wall, coming closer to the ring.
Or what?
Varen said, nearing her. Nox stiffened, his hand drifting to his sword. But Selena refused to back down.
Or I'll rip out your tongue.
That's enough! Brello barked. Take it out in the ring! Varen, Lillian, now! Varen gave her a snake-like smile, and Kane clapped him on the back as he entered the chalk-etched circle, drawing his sword. Nox put a hand on her shoulder, and out of the corner of her eye, she spied Kaol and Dorian watching them closely. She ignored them. It was enough. Enough of the pretending and the meekness. Enough of Kane. Varen raised his sword, shaking his blonde curls out of his eyes.
Let's see what you've got.
She stalked toward him, keeping her sword sheathed at her side. Varen's grin widened as he lifted his blade. He swung, but Selena struck, ramming her fist into his arm, sending the blade soaring through the air. In the same breath, her palm hit his left arm, knocking it aside, too. As he staggered back, her leg came up, and Varen's eyes bulged as her foot slammed into his chest. The kick sent him flying, and his body crunched as it hit the floor and slid out of the ring, instantly eliminating him. The hall was utterly silent.
Mock me again? She spat at Varen. And I'll do that with my sword the next time.
She turned from him and found Brullo's face slack.
Here's a lesson for you, weapons master, she said, stalking past him. Give me real men to fight. Then maybe I'll bother trying.
She strode away, past the grinning Nox, and stopped before Kane. She stared up at his face, a face that might have been handsome had he not been a bastard, and smiled with sweet venom.
Here I am, she said, squaring her shoulders. Just a little lapdog.
Kane's black eyes gleamed.
All I hear is yapping.
Her hand itched toward her sword, but she kept it at her side.
Let's see if you still hear yapping when I win this competition.
Before he could say more, she stalked to the water table. Only Nox dared speak to her after that. Surprisingly, Kaol didn't reprimand her either. When she was safely back in her rooms after the test, Selena watched the snowflakes drift from the hills beyond Rifthold. They swept toward her, harbingers of the storm that was to come. The late afternoon sun, trapped beneath a wall of pewter, stained the clouds a yellowish gray, making the sun unusually bright. It felt surreal, as if the horizon had disappeared beyond the hills. She was stranded in a world of glass. Selena left the window, but stopped before the tapestry in its depiction of Queen Elena. She had often wished for adventure, for old spells and wicked kings, but she hadn't realized it would be like this, a fight for her freedom. And she'd always imagined that there'd be someone to help her, a loyal friend or a one-armed soldier or something. She hadn't imagined she would be so alone. She wished Sam were with her. He'd always known what to do, always had her back, whether she wanted him to or not. She would give anything, anything in the world, to have him still with her. Her eyes burned, and Selena put a hand to the amulet. The metal was warm beneath her fingers, comforting somehow. She took a step back from the tapestry to better study the entire scope of it. In the center stood a stag, magnificent and virile, gazing sideways at Elena. The symbol of the royal house of Terrasen, of the kingdom that Brannan, Elena's father, had founded. A reminder that though Elena had become Queen of Otterlin, she still belonged to Terrasen. Like Selena, no matter where Elena went, no matter how far, Terrasen would always own a part of her. Selena listened to the wind howl. With a sigh, she shook her head and turned away.
find the evil in the castle. But the only truly evil thing in this world is the man ruling it.
Across the castle, Caltaine Rompier clapped lightly as a troop of acrobats finished their tumbling. The performance had stopped at last. She didn't feel inclined to watch peasants bouncing about in bright colors for hours, but Queen Georgina enjoyed it and had invited her to sit beside the throne today. It was an honor and had been arranged through Parrington. Parrington wanted her, she knew it, and if she pushed, she could easily get him to offer to make her his duchess. But duchess wasn't enough. Not when Dorian was still unmarried. Her head had been pounding for the past week, and today it seemed to throb with the words, not enough, not enough, not enough. Even in her sleep, the pain seeped in, warping her dreams into nightmares so vivid she couldn't remember where she was when she awoke.
"How delightful, Your Majesty," Caltaine said as the acrobats gathered their things. "Yes, they were rather exciting, weren't they?"
The queen's green eyes were bright, and she smiled at Caltaine. Just then, Caltaine's head gave a bolt of pain so strong she clenched her fists, hiding them in the folds of her tangerine-colored gown.
"I do wish Prince Dorian could have seen them," Caltaine got out. "His Highness told me only yesterday how much he enjoyed coming here."
The lie was easy enough, and somehow it made the pain of the headache ease.
"Dorian said that?"
Queen Georgina raised an auburn eyebrow.
"Does that surprise Your Majesty?"
The queen put a hand to her chest.
"I thought my son had a distaste for such things." "Your Majesty," she whispered, "will you swear not to say a word?"
"A word about what?" the queen whispered back.
"Well, Prince Dorian told me something."
"What did he say?" The queen touched Caltaine's arm.
"He said that the reason he doesn't come to court so often is because he's rather shy."
The queen withdrew, the light in her eyes fading.
"Oh, he's told me that 100 times. I was so hoping you'd tell me something interesting, Lady Caltaine. Like if he's found a young woman he favors."
Caltaine's face warmed, and her head pounded mercilessly. She wished for her pipe, but hours remained of this court session, and it wouldn't be proper to leave until Georgina departed.
"I heard," said the queen under her breath, "that there's a young lady, but no one knows who. Or at least when they hear her name, it's nothing familiar. Do you know her?"
"No, Your Majesty," Caltaine fought to keep the frustration from her face.
"What a pity. I had hoped that you, of all people, would know. You're such a clever girl, Caltaine."
"Thank you, Your Majesty. You are too kind."
"Nonsense. I'm an excellent judge of character. I knew how extraordinary you were the moment you entered the court. Only you are suitable for a man of Parrington's prowess. What a pity you didn't meet my Dorian first."
"Not enough, not enough," the pain sang. This was her time.
"Even if I had," Caltaine chuckled, "Your Majesty surely would not have approved. I'm far too lowly for the attentions of your son."
"Your beauty and wealth compensate for it."
"Thank you, Your Majesty."
Caltaine's heart pounded quickly. If the queen approved of her, Caltaine could scarcely think as the queen nestled into her throne, then clapped her hands twice. The music began. Caltaine didn't hear it. Parrington had given her the shoes. Now was her time to dance.
Chapter 30.
"You're not focusing."
"Yes, I am," Selena said through her teeth, pulling the bowstring back even farther.
"Then go ahead," Kaol said,
pointing to a distant target along the far wall of the abandoned hallway. An outrageous distance for anyone, except her.
"Let's see you make that."
She rolled her eyes and straightened her spine a bit. The bowstring quivered in her hand, and she lifted the tip of her arrow slightly.
"You're going to hit the left wall," he said, crossing his arms.
"I'm going to hit you in the head if you don't shut up." She turned her head to meet his gaze. His brows rose, and still staring at him, she smiled quickly as she blindly fired the arrow.
The whiz of the arrow's flight filled the stone hallway before the faint, dull thud of impact. But they remained gazing at each other. His eyes were slightly purple beneath. Hadn't he gotten any sleep in the 3 weeks since Xavier had died?
She certainly hadn't been sleeping well either. Every noise woke her, and Kaol hadn't yet discovered who might be targeting the champions one by one. The who didn't matter as much to her as the how.
How was the killer selecting them?
There was no pattern. Five were dead, and they had no connection to each other, aside from the competition. She hadn't been able to see another crime scene to determine if word marks had been painted in blood there as well. Selena sighed, rolling her shoulders.
Kane knows who I am, she said quietly, lowering her bow.
His face remained blank.
How?
Parrington told him, and Kane told me.
When?
She'd never seen him look so serious. It made something within her strain.
A few days ago, she lied.
It had been weeks since their confrontation.
I was in the Guardian with Nehemia, with my guards, don't worry, and he approached us. He knows all about me, and knows that I hold back when we're with the other champions.
Did he lead you to believe that the other champions know about you?
No, she said. I don't think they do. Knox doesn't have a clue.
Kaol put a hand on the hilt of his sword.
It's going to be fine. The element of surprise is gone, that's all. You'll still beat Kane in the duels.
She half-smiled.
You know, it's starting to sound like you actually believe in me.
You'd better be careful.
He began to say something, but running footsteps sounded from around the corner, and he paused.
Two guards skidded to a stop and saluted them. Kaol gave them a moment to collect their breath before he said,
Yes.
One of the guards, an aging man with thinning hair, saluted a second time and said,
Captain, you're needed.
Though his features remained neutral, Kaol's shoulders shifted, and his chin rose a bit higher.
What is it?
He said a bit too quickly to pass for unconcerned.
Another body, replied the guard.
In the servants' passages. The second guard, a slender, frail-looking young man, was deathly pale.
You saw the body? Selena asked him.
The guard nodded.
How fresh?
Kaol gave her a sharp look. The guard said,
They think it's from last night, from the way the blood's half-dried.
Kaol's eyes were unfocused. Thinking. He was figuring out what to do. He straightened.
You want to prove how good you are?
He asked her.
She put her hands on her hips. Do I even need to?
He motioned the guards to lead the way.
Come with me,
he said to her over his shoulder, and, despite the body, she smiled a bit and followed him. As they departed, Selena looked back at the target. Kaol had been right. She'd missed the center by 6 inches. To the left. Thankfully, someone had created some semblance of order before they arrived. Even still, Kaol had to push his way through a crowd of gathered guards and servants, Selena keeping close behind him. When they reached the edge of the crowd and beheld the body, her hands slackened at her sides. Kaol cursed with impressive violence. She didn't know where to look first. At the body, with the gaping chest cavity and missing brain and face. At the claw marks gouged into the ground. Or at the 2 word marks, drawn on either side of the body in chalk. Her blood went cold. There was no denying their connection now. The crowd continued talking as the captain approached the body, then turned to one of the guards watching him.
Who is it?
Varen Yislich, Selena said before the guard could reply.
She'd recognize Varen's curly hair anywhere. Varen had been at the head of the pack since this competition started. Whatever had killed him.
What kind of animal makes scratches like those? She asked Kaol, but didn't need to hear his reply to know that his guess was as good as hers.
The claw marks were deep, a quarter of an inch at least. She crouched beside one and ran her finger along the interior edge. It was jagged, but cut clean into the stone floor. Her brows knotting, she scanned the other claw marks.
There's no blood in these claw marks, she said,
twisting her head to look over her shoulder at Kaol. He knelt beside her as she pointed to them.
They're clean.
Which means?
She frowned, fighting the chill that ran down her arms. Whatever did this sharpened its nails before it gutted him.
And why is that important?
She stood, looking up and down the hallway, then squatted again. It means this thing had time to do that before it attacked him.
It could have done it while lying in wait.
She shook her head. Those torches along the wall are almost burnt to stubs. There aren't any signs of them being extinguished before the attack. There are no traces of sooty water. If Varen died last night, then those torches were still burning when he died.
And?
And look at this hallway. The nearest doorway is 50 feet down, and the nearest corner is a bit farther than that. If those torches were burning,
then Varen would have seen whatever it was long before he got to this spot.
So why get near it? She asked, more to herself than anything. What if it wasn't an animal, but a person? And what if that person disabled Varen long enough for them to summon this creature? She pointed to Varen's legs. Those are clean cuts around his ankles. His tendons were snapped by a knife to keep him from running. She moved next to the body, taking care not to disturb the word marks etched into the ground as she lifted Varen's rigid, cold hand. Look at his fingernails. She swallowed hard. The tips are cracked and shattered. She used her own nail to scrape out the dirt beneath his nails and smeared it across her palm. See? She held out her hand for Kaol to observe. Dust and bits of stone. She pulled aside Varen's arm, revealing faint lines in the stone beneath. Fingernail marks. He was desperate to get away, to drag himself by his fingertips if necessary. He was alive the entire time that thing sharpened its claws on the stone while its master watched.
So what does that mean?
She smiled grimly at him. It means that you're in a lot of trouble.
And, as Kaol's face paled, Selena realized with a jolt that perhaps the champion's killer and Elena's mysterious evil force might be one and the same.
Seated at the dining table, Selena flipped through the book. Nothing, nothing, nothing. She scanned page after page for any sign of the two word marks that had been drawn beside Varen's body. There had to be a connection. She stopped as a map of Aurelia appeared. Maps had always interested her. There was something bewitching in knowing one's precise location in relation to others on the earth. She gently traced a finger along the eastern coast. She began in the south, at Banjali, the Eelway capital, then went up, curving and snaking all the way to Rifthold. Her finger then traveled through Mia, then north and inland to Orinth, then back to the sea, to the Saurian coast, and finally to the very tip of the continent and the North Sea beyond. She stared at Orinth, that city of light and learning, the pearl of Aurelia and capital of Terrasen, her birthplace. Selena slammed shut the book. Glancing around her room, the assassin let out a long sigh. When she managed to sleep, her dreams were haunted by ancient battles, by swords with eyes, by word marks that swirled around her head and blinded her with their bright colors. She could see the gleaming armor of fey and mortal warriors, hear the clash of shields and the snarl of vicious beasts, and smell blood and rotting corpses all around her. Carnage trailed in her wake. Otterlin's assassin shuddered.
Oh, good. I hoped you'd still be awake, the Crown Prince said, and Selena jumped from her seat to find Dorian approaching.
He looked tired and a bit ruffled. She opened her mouth, then shook her head. What are you doing here? It's almost midnight and I've got a test tomorrow.
She couldn't deny having him here was a bit of a relief. The murderer only seemed to attack champions when they were alone. Have you moved from literature to history?
He surveyed the books on the table.
A Brief History of Modern Aurelia, he read. Symbols and Power, Eelway Culture and Customs.
He raised an eyebrow. I read what I like.
He slid into the seat beside her, his leg brushing hers. Is there a connection between all of these?
No.
It wasn't quite a lie, though she had hoped for all of them to contain something about word marks, or what they meant beside a corpse.
I assume you heard about Varen's death?
Of course, he said, a dark expression crossing his handsome face. She was all too aware of how close his leg was, but she couldn't bring herself to shift away.
"And you're not at all concerned that so many champions have been brutally murdered at the hands of someone's feral beast?"
Dorian leaned in, his eyes fixed on hers. "All of those murders occurred in dark, isolated hallways. You're never without guards, and your chambers are well watched."
"I'm not concerned for myself," she said sharply, pulling back a bit, which wasn't entirely true. "I just think it reflects poorly on your esteemed father to have all of this going on."
"When was the last time you bothered to care for the reputation of my esteemed father?"
"Since I became his son's champion. So perhaps you ought to devote some additional resources to solving these murders, before I win this absurd competition just because I'm the last one left alive."
"Any more demands?" he asked, still close enough for her lips to graze his if she dared.
"I'll let you know if I think of any."
Their eyes locked. A slow smile spread across her face. What sort of a man was the Crown Prince? Though she didn't want to admit it, it was nice to have someone around, even if he was a Havilyard. She pushed claw marks and brainless corpses from her thoughts.
"Why are you so disheveled? Has Caltaine been clawing at you?"
"Caltaine? Thankfully not recently. But what a miserable day it was. The pups are mutts, and..."
He put his head in his hands.
"Pups?" "One of my bitches gave birth to a litter of mongrels. Before, they were too young to tell, but now... well, I'd hoped for purebreds."
"Are we speaking of dogs or of women?"
"Which would you prefer?"
He gave her an impish grin. "Oh, hush up," she hissed, and he chuckled.
"Why, might I ask, are you so disheveled?"
His smile faltered.
"Kaol told me he took you to see the body. I hope it wasn't too harrowing."
"Not at all. It's just that I haven't slept well."
"Me neither," he admitted.
He straightened.
"Will you play the pianoforte for me?"
Selena tapped her foot on the floor, wondering how he had moved on to such a different subject. "Of course not."
"You played beautifully."
"If I had known someone was spying on me, I wouldn't have played at all."
"Why is playing so personal for you?"
He leaned back in his chair. "I can't hear or play music without... never mind."
"No, tell me what you were going to say."
"Nothing interesting," she said, stacking the books.
"Does it stir up memories?"
She eyed him, searching for any sign of mockery. "Sometimes."
"Memories of your parents?"
He reached to help her stack the remaining books. Selena stood suddenly. "Don't ask such stupid questions."
"I'm sorry if I pried."
She didn't respond. The door in her mind that she kept locked at all times had been cracked open by the question, and now she tried frantically to close it. Seeing his face, seeing him so near to her,
the door shut, and she turned the key. "It's just..." he said, oblivious to the battle that had just occurred. "It's just that I don't know anything about you."
"I'm an assassin." Her heartbeat calmed. "That's all there is to know."
"Yes," he said with a sigh. "But why is it so wrong for me to want to know more? Like how you became an assassin, and what things were like for you before that."
"It's not interesting."
"I wouldn't find it boring."
She didn't say anything.
"Please. One question, and I promise nothing too sensitive."
Her mouth twisted to the side, and she looked at the table. What harm was there in a question? She could choose not to reply. "Very well."
He grinned. "I need a moment to think of a good one."
She rolled her eyes, but sat down. After a few seconds, he asked, "Why do you like music so much?"
She made a face.
"You said nothing sensitive."
"Is that prying? How different is that from asking why you like to read?"
No, that question is fine." She let out a long breath through her nose and stared at the table. "I like music," she said slowly, "because when I hear it, I lose myself within myself, if that makes sense. I become empty and full all at once, and I can feel the whole earth roiling around me. When I play, I'm not... for once, I'm not destroying. I'm creating.
She chewed on her lip.
I used to want to be a healer. Back before this became my profession.
When I was almost too young to remember, I wanted to be a healer. She shrugged.
Music reminds me of that feeling.
She laughed under her breath.
I've never told anyone that,
she admitted, then saw his smile.
Don't mock me.
He shook his head, wiping the smile from his lips. I'm not mocking you, I'm just...
Unused to hearing people speak from the heart?
Well, yes. She smiled slightly.
Now it's my turn. Are there any limitations?
No. He tucked his hands behind his head. I'm not nearly as private as you are. She made a face as she thought of the question.
Why aren't you married yet?
Married? I'm 19.
Yes, but you're the crown prince.
He crossed his arms. She tried not to notice the cut of muscle that shifted just beneath the fabric of his shirt. Ask another question.
I want to hear your answer. It must be interesting if you're so ardently resisting.
He looked at the window and the snow that swirled beyond. I'm not married, he said softly, because I can't stomach the idea of marrying a woman inferior to me in mind and spirit. It would mean the death of my soul.
Marriage is a legal contract. It's not a sacred thing. As crown prince, you should have given up such fanciful notions. What if you're ordered to marry for the sake of an alliance?
Would you start a war because of your romantic ideals? It's not like that.
Oh? Your father wouldn't command you to marry some princess in order to strengthen his empire?
My father has an army to do that for him.
You could easily love some woman on the side. Marriage doesn't mean you can't love other people.
His sapphire eyes flashed. You marry the person you love and none other, he said. And she laughed. You're mocking me. You're laughing in my face.
You deserve to be laughed at for such foolish thoughts. I spoke from my soul. You speak only from selfishness.
You're remarkably judgmental.
What's the point in having a mind if you don't use it to make judgments?
What's the point in having a heart if you don't use it to spare others from the harsh judgments of your mind?
Oh, well said, Your Highness.
He stared at her sullenly.
Come now, I didn't wound you that severely.
You've attempted to ruin my dreams and ideals. I get enough from my mother as it is. You're just being cruel.
I'm being practical. There's a difference. And you're the Crown Prince of Otterlin.
You're in a position where it's possible for you to change Aurelia for the better.
You could help create a world where true love isn't needed to secure a happy ending.
And what sort of world would I need to create for that to happen?
A world where men govern themselves.
You speak of anarchy and treason.
I do not speak of anarchy. Call me a traitor all you like. I've been convicted as an assassin already.
He sidled closer to her, and his fingers brushed hers, calloused, warm, and hard. You can't resist the opportunity to respond to everything I say, can you? She felt restless, but at the same time remarkably still. Something was brought to life and laid to sleep in his gaze. Your eyes are very strange, he said. I've never seen any with such a bright ring of gold.
If you're attempting to woo me with flattery, I'm afraid it won't work.
I was merely observing. I have no agenda. He looked at his hand, still touching hers. Where did you get that ring?
She contracted her hand into a fist as she pulled it away from him. The amethyst in her ring glowed in the firelight. It was a gift.
From whom?
That's none of your concern.
He shrugged, though she knew better than to tell him who'd really given it to her. Rather, she knew Kaol wouldn't want Dorian to know. I'd like to know who's been giving rings to my champion. The way the collar of his black jacket lay across his neck made her unable to sit still. She wanted to touch him, to trace the line between his tan skin and the golden lining of the fabric.
Billiards? She asked, rising to her feet. I could use another lesson.
Selena didn't wait for his answer as she strode toward the gaming room. She very much wanted to stand close to him and have her skin warm under his breath. She liked that. Worse than that, she realized,
She liked him.
Kaol watched Parrington at his table in the dining hall. When he had approached the Duke about Varen's death, he hadn't seemed bothered.
Kaol looked around the cavernous hall. In fact, most of the champion sponsors went about as usual.
Idiots.
If Selena was actually right about it, then whoever was responsible for killing the champions could be among them.
But which of the members of the King's Council would be so desperate to win that he'd do such a thing?
Kaol stretched his legs beneath the table and shifted his attention back to Parrington. He'd seen how the Duke used his size and title to win allies on the King's Council and keep opponents from challenging him. But it wasn't his maneuverings that had captured the interest of the Captain of the Guard tonight. Rather, it was the moments between the grins and laughter, when a shadow passed across the Duke's face. It wasn't an expression of anger or of disgust, but a shade that clouded his eyes. It was so strange that when Kaol had first seen it, he'd extended his dinner just to see if it happened again. A few moments later, it did. Parrington's eyes became dark, and his face cleared, as if he saw everything in the world for what it was, and found no joy or amusement in it. Kaol leaned back in his chair, sipping his water. He knew little of the Duke, and had never entirely trusted him. Neither had Dorian, especially not after all his talk of using Nehemia as a hostage to get the Ilway rebels to cooperate. But the Duke was the King's most trusted advisor, and had offered no cause for mistrust other than a fierce belief in Otterlin's right to conquest. Caltaine Rompier sat a few chairs away. Kaol's brows rose slightly. Her eyes were upon Parrington as well, filled not with the longing of a beloved, but with cold contemplation. Kaol stretched again, lifting his arms over his head. Where was Dorian? The prince hadn't come to dinner, nor was he in the kennels with the bitch and her pups. His gaze returned to the Duke. There it was, for a moment. Parrington's eyes fell upon the black ring on his left hand and darkened, as if his pupils had expanded to encompass all of each eye. Then it was gone. His eyes returned to normal. Kaol looked to Caltaine. Had she noticed the odd change? No. Her face remained the same. There was no bewilderment, no surprise. Her look became shallow, as if she were more interested in how his jacket might complement her dress. Kaol stretched and rose, finishing his apple as he strode from the dining hall. Strange as it was, he had enough to worry about. The Duke was ambitious, but certainly not a threat to the castle or its inhabitants. But even as the Captain of the Guard walked to his rooms, he couldn't shake the feeling that Duke Parrington had been watching him, too.
Chapter 31.
Someone was standing at the foot of her bed. Selena knew this long before she opened her eyes, and she eased her hand beneath her pillow, pulling out the makeshift knife she'd crafted of pin, string, and soap.
"That's unnecessary,"
a woman said, and Selena sat upright at the sound of Elena's voice.
"And would be wholly ineffective."
Her blood went cold at the sight of the shimmering specter of the first Queen of Otterlin. Though Elena looked fully formed, the edges of her body gleamed as though made from starlight. Her long silver hair flowed around her beautiful face, and she smiled as Selena set down her miserably pathetic knife.
"Hello, child," the Queen said.
"What do you want?" Selena demanded, but kept her voice down. Was she dreaming, or could the guards hear her? She tensed, her legs preparing to leap from the bed, perhaps toward the balcony, since Elena stood between her and the door.
"Simply to remind you that you must win this competition."
"I already plan to."
She'd been woken up for this?
"And it's not for you," she added coldly. "I'm doing it for my freedom. Do you have anything useful to say, or are you just here to bother me? Or maybe you could just tell me more about this evil thing that's hunting the champions down one by one."
Elena sighed, lifting her eyes to the ceiling. "I know as little as you."
When Selena's frown didn't disappear, Elena said,
"You don't trust me yet. I understand.
But you and I are on the same side, whether you allow yourself to believe it or not." She lowered her gaze to the assassin, pinning her with the intensity of it.
"I came here
to warn you to keep an eye on your right.
Excuse me? Selena cocked her head. What does that mean?
Look to your right. You'll find the answers there.
Selena looked to her right, but all she saw was the tapestry that concealed the tomb. She opened her mouth to snap a response, but when she looked back at Elena, the queen was gone. At her test the next day, Selena studied the small table before her and all the goblets it contained. It had been over 2 weeks since Sam Heughan, and while she'd passed yet another test, knife-throwing to her relief, another champion had been found dead just 2 days ago. To say she was getting little sleep these days was an understatement. When she wasn't searching for an indication of what the word marks around the corpses had meant, she spent most of the night wide awake, watching her windows and doors, listening for the scrape of claw on stone. The royal guards outside her rooms didn't help. If this beast was capable of gouging marble, it could take down a few men. Brello stood at the front of the sparring hall, his hands clasped behind his back, watching the 13 remaining competitors standing at 13 individual tables. He glanced at the clock. Selena looked at it, too. She had 5 minutes left. 5 minutes during which she not only had to identify the poisons in 7 goblets, but arrange them in the order of the most benign to the deadliest. The true test, however, would come at the end of the 5 minutes, when they were to drink from the goblet they deemed the most harmless. If they got the answer wrong, even with antidotes on hand, it would be unpleasant. Selena rolled her neck and lifted one of the goblets to her nose, sniffing. Sweet. Too sweet. She swirled the dessert wine they'd used to conceal the sweetness, but in the bronze goblet it was difficult to see the color. She dipped her finger into the cup, studying the purple liquid as it dripped off her nail. Definitely belladonna. She looked at the other goblets she'd identified. Hemlock, bloodroot, monk's hood, oleander. She shifted the goblets into order, squeezing in belladonna just before the goblet containing a lethal dose of oleander. 3 minutes left. Selena picked up the penultimate goblet and sniffed. And sniffed again. It didn't smell like anything. She shifted her face away from the table and sniffed the air, hoping to clear her nostrils. When trying perfumes, people sometimes lose their sense of smell after sniffing too many, which was why perfumers usually kept something on sight to help clear the scent from the nose. She sniffed the goblet again and dunked her finger. It smelled like water, looked like water. Perhaps it was just water. She set down the glass and picked up the final goblet, but when she sniffed it, the wine inside didn't have any unusual smell. It seemed fine. She bit her lip and glanced at the clock. 2 minutes left. Some of the other champions were cursing under their breath. Whoever got the order most wrong went home. Selena sniffed the goblet again, racing through a list of odorless poisons. None of them could be combined with water, not without coloring it. She picked up the wine goblet, swirling the liquid. Wine could conceal any number of advanced poisons, but which one was it? At the table to the left of her, Knox ran his hands through his dark hair. He had 3 goblets in front of him, the other 4 in line behind them. 90 seconds left. Poisons, poisons, poisons. Her mouth went dry. If she lost, would Elena haunt her from spite? Selena glanced to the right to find Paylor, the gangly young assassin, watching her. He was down to the same 2 goblets that she struggled with, and she watched as he put the water glass at the very end of the spectrum, the most poisonous, and the wine glass at the other. His eyes flicked to hers, and his chin drooped in a barely detectable nod. He put his hands in his pockets. He was done. Selena turned to her own goblets before Brello could catch her. Poisons. That's what Paylor had said during their first test. He was trained in poisons. She glanced at him sidelong. He stood to her right.
Look to your right. You'll find the answers there.
A chill went down her spine. Elena had been telling the truth. Paylor stared at the clock, watching it count down the seconds until the test was over. But why help her? She moved the water glass to the end of the line, and put the wine glass first. Because aside from her, Cain's favorite champion to torment was Pelor. And because when she'd been in Endovir, the allies she'd made hadn't been the darlings of the Overseers, but the ones the Overseers had hated the most. The outsiders looked out for each other. None of the other champions had bothered to pay attention to Pelor. Even Brello, it seemed, had forgotten Pelor's claim that first day. If he'd known, he never would have allowed them to do the test so publicly.
"Time's up! Make your final order," Brello said, and Selena stared at her line of goblets for a moment longer.
On the side of the room, Dorian and Kaol watched with crossed arms. Had they noticed Pelor's help?
Nox cursed colorfully and shoved his remaining glasses into the line, many of the competitors doing the same. Antidotes were on hand in case mistakes were made, and as Brello began going through the tables, telling the champions to drink, he handed them out frequently. Most of them had assumed the wine with nothing in it was a trap and placed it toward the end of the spectrum. Even Nox wound up chugging a vial of antidote. He put Monk's Hood first. And Cain, to her delight, wound up going purple in the face after consuming Belladonna. As he guzzled down the antidote, she wished Brello had somehow run out. So far, no one had won the test. One champion drank the water and was on the ground before Brello could hand him the antidote. Bloodbane, a horrible, painful poison. Even consuming just a little could cause vivid hallucinations and disorientation. Thankfully, the weapons master forced him to swallow the antidote, though the champion still had to be rushed to the castle infirmary. At last, Brello stopped at her table to survey her line of goblets. His face revealed nothing as he said,
"On with it, then."
Selena glanced at Pelor, whose hazel eyes shone as she lifted the glass of wine to her lips and drank a sip. Nothing. No strange taste, no immediate sensation. Some poisons could take longer to affect you, but... Brello extended a fist to her, and her stomach clenched. Was the antidote inside? But his finger splayed, and he only clapped her on the back.
"The right one. Just wine," he said, and the champions murmured behind him.
He moved on to Pelor, the last champion, and the youth drank the glass of wine. Brello grinned at him, grasping his shoulder.
"Another winner!"
Applause rippled through the sponsors and trainers, and Selena flashed an appreciative grin in the assassin's direction. He grinned back, going red from his neck to his copper hair. So she'd cheated a little, but she'd won. She could handle sharing the victory with an ally. And yes, Elena was looking out for her, but that didn't change anything. Even if her path and Elena's demands were now tied closely together, she wouldn't become the king's champion just to serve some ghost's agenda, an agenda that Elena had twice now failed to reveal. Even if Elena had told her how to win the test. Chapter 32. After cutting short their lesson in favor of a stroll, Selena and Nehemia walked through the spacious halls of the castle, guards trailing behind them. Whatever Nehemia thought of the flock of guards that followed Selena everywhere, she didn't say anything, despite the fact that Yulmus was a month away, and the final duel 5 days after that. Every evening, for an hour before dinner, Selena and the princess divided their time equally between Ilwe and the common tongue. Selena had Nehemia read from her library books, and then forced her to copy letter after letter until they looked flawless. Since they'd begun their lessons, the princess had greatly improved her fluency in the common tongue, though the girl still spoke Ilwe. Perhaps it was for ease and comfort. Perhaps it was to see the raised eyebrows and gaping mouths when others overheard them. Perhaps it was to keep their conversations private. Whichever reason, the assassin found the language preferable. At least Endovir had taught her something.
"You're quiet today," Nehemia said. "Is something the matter?" Selena smiled weakly. Something was the matter.
She'd slept so poorly the previous night that she'd wished for dawn to arrive early. Another champion was dead. Not to mention there was still the matter of Elena's commands. "I was up late reading, is all." They entered a part of the castle that Selena had never seen before.
"I sense much worry in you,"
Nehemia said suddenly.
And I hear much that you do not say. You never voice any of your troubles, though your eyes betray them.
Was she so transparent?
We're friends,
Nehemia said softly.
When you need me, I'll be there.
Selena's throat tightened, and she put a hand on Nehemia's shoulder.
No one has called me friend in a long time, the assassin said. An inky black crept into the corner of her memory, and she struggled against it. There are parts of me that I...
She heard it then, the sound that haunted her dreams.
Hooves pounding, thunderous hooves.
Selena shook her head and the sound stopped.
Thank you, Nehemia, she said with sincerity. You're a true friend.
Her heart was raw and trembling, and the darkness faded. Nehemia suddenly groaned.
The queen asked me to watch some acting troupe perform one of her favorite plays tonight. Will you go with me? I could use a translator.
Selena frowned. I'm afraid that...
You cannot go.
Nehemia's voice was tinted with annoyance, and Selena gave her friend an apologetic look.
There are certain things that...
Selena began, but the princess shook her head.
We all have our secrets.
Though I'm curious why you're so closely watched by that captain and locked in your rooms at night.
If I were a fool, I'd say they're afraid of you.
The assassin smiled. Men will always be silly about such things. She thought about what the princess had said, and worry slipped into her stomach. So are you actually on good terms with the Queen of Otterlin? You didn't really make an effort to start off that way. The princess nodded, lifting her chin.
You know that the situation between our countries isn't pleasant right now. While I might have been a little distant with Georgina at first, I realized that it might be in Ilway's best interest if I make more of an effort. So I've been speaking with her for some weeks now, hoping to make her aware of how we might improve our relations. I think inviting me tonight is a sign that I might be making some progress.
And, Selena realized, through Georgina, Nehemia would also get the King of Otterlin's ear. Selena bit her lip, but then quickly smiled. I'm sure your parents are pleased. They turned down a hall and the sound of barking dogs filled the air.
Where are we?
The kennels. Nehemia beamed. The prince showed me the pups yesterday, though I think he was just looking for an excuse to get out of his mother's court for a while. It was bad enough they were walking together without Kaol, but to enter the kennels.
Are we allowed to be here?
Nehemia straightened.
I am Princess of Ilway, she said. I can go wherever I please.
Selena followed the princess through a large wooden door. Wrinkling her nose at the sudden smell, the assassin walked past cages and stalls filled with dogs of many different breeds. Some were so large that they came up to her hip, while others had legs the length of her hand with bodies as long as her arm. The breeds were all fascinating and beautiful, but the sleek hounds aroused awe within her breast. Their arched undersides and slender, long legs were full of grace and speed. They did not yap as the other dogs did, but sat perfectly still and watched her with dark, wise eyes.
Are these all hunting dogs?
Selena asked, but Nehemia had disappeared. She could hear her voice, and the voice of another, and then saw a hand extended from within a stall to beckon Selena inside. The assassin hurried to the pen and looked down over the gate. Dorian Havilyard smiled at her as Nehemia took a seat.
Why, hello, Lady Lillian,
he purred, and set aside a brown and gold puppy. I didn't expect to see you here, though with Nehemia's passion for hunting, I can't say I'm surprised she finally dragged you along.
Selena stared at the four dogs. These are the mutts?
Dorian picked one up and stroked its head. Pity, isn't it? I still can't resist their charm. Carefully, watching Nehemia laugh as two dogs leapt upon her and buried her beneath tongues and wagging tails, the assassin opened the pen door and slipped inside. Nehemia pointed to the corner.
Is that dog sick?
She asked. There was a fifth pup, a bit larger than the others, and its coat was a silky, silvery gold that shimmered in the shadows. It opened its dark eyes, as if it knew it was being spoken about, and watched them. It was a beautiful animal, and had Selena not known better, she would have thought it purebred.
"It's not sick," Dorian said. "It just has a foul disposition. It won't come near anyone, human or canine."
"With good reason," Selena said, stepping over the legs of the Crown Prince and nearing the fifth pup. "Why should it touch someone like you?"
"If it won't respond to humans, then it will have to be killed," Dorian said offhandedly, and a spark went through Selena.
"Kill it? Kill it? For what reason? What did it do to you?"
"It won't make a suitable pet, which is what all of these dogs will become."
"So you'd kill it because of its temperament? It can't help being that way."
She looked around.
"Where's its mother? Perhaps it needs her."
"Its mother only sees them to nurse, and for a few hours of socialization. I usually raise these dogs for racing and hunting, not for cuddling."
"It's cruel to keep it from its mother."
The assassin reached into the shadow and scooped the puppy into her arms. She held it against her chest.
"I won't let you harm it."
"If its spirit is strange," Nehemia offered, "it would be a burden."
"A burden to whom?"
"It's nothing to be upset about," Dorian said. "Plenty of dogs are painlessly laid to rest each day. I don't see why you would object to that."
"Well, don't kill this one," she said. "Let me keep it, if only so you don't kill it."
Dorian observed her. "If it upsets you so much, I won't have it killed. I'll arrange for a home, and I'll even ask for your approval before I make a final decision."
"You do that?"
"What's the dog's life to me? If it pleases you, then it shall happen."
Her face burned as he rose to his feet, standing close.
You promise?"
He put a hand on his heart. "I swear on my crown that the pup shall live." She was suddenly aware of how near to touching they were.
"Thank you."
Nehemia watched them from the floor, her brows raised, until one of her personal guards appeared at the gate.
"It's time to go, princess," he said in Eelway. "You must dress for your evening with the queen."
The princess stood, pushing past the bouncing puppies.
"Do you want to walk with me?"
Nehemia said in the common tongue to Selena. Selena nodded and opened the gate for them. Shutting the gate, she looked back at the crown prince. "Well, aren't you coming with us?"
He slumped down into the pen, and the puppies immediately leapt on him. "Perhaps I'll see you later tonight."
"If you're lucky," Selena purred, and walked away.
She smiled to herself as they strode through the castle. Eventually, Nehemia turned to her.
"Do you like him?"
Selena made a face.
"Of course not. Why would I?"
"You converse easily. It seems as if you have a connection."
"A connection?" Selena choked on the word. "I just enjoy teasing him."
"It's not a crime if you consider him handsome.
I'll admit I judged him wrong. I thought him to be a pompous, selfish idiot, but he's not so bad." "He's a Havilyard."
"My mother was the daughter of a chief who sought to overthrow my grandfather."
"We're both silly. It's nothing."
"He seems to take great interest in you."
Selena's head whipped around, her eyes full of long-forgotten fury that made her belly ache and twist. "I would sooner cut out my own heart than love a Havilyard," she snarled. They completed their walk in silence, and when they parted ways, Selena quickly wished Nehemia a pleasant evening before striding to her part of the castle. The few guards that followed her remained a respectful distance away, a distance that grew greater each day. Based on Kaol's orders? Night had recently fallen, and the sky remained a deep blue, staining the snow piled upon the panes of the windows. She could easily walk right out of the castle, stock up on supplies in Rifthold, and be on a ship to the south by morning. Selena stopped at a window, leaning in close to the panes. The guards stopped too, and said nothing as they waited. The coldness from outside seeped in, kissing her face. Would they expect her to go south? Perhaps going north would be the unexpected choice. No one went north in winter unless they had a death wish. Something shifted in the reflection of the window, and she whirled as she beheld the man standing behind her. But Cain didn't smile at her, not in that mocking way. Instead, He panted, his mouth opening and closing like a fish wrenched from water. His dark eyes were wide, and he had a hand around his enormous throat.
Hopefully he was choking to death.
"Is something wrong?" she asked sweetly, leaning against the wall.
He glanced from side to side, at the guards, at the window, before his eyes snapped to hers.
His grip on his throat tightened, as if to silence the words that fought to come out, and the ebony ring on his finger gleamed dully. Even though it should have been impossible, he seemed to have packed on an additional 10 pounds of muscle in the past few days. In fact, every time she saw him, Kane seemed bigger and bigger. Her brows knotted, and she uncrossed her arms.
"Kane?"
she said, but he took off down the hall like a jackrabbit, faster than he should have any ability to run. He peered a few times over his shoulder, not at her or the confused and murmuring guards, but at something beyond. Selena waited until the sounds of his fleeing footsteps faded, then hurried back to her own rooms. She sent messages to Knox and Paylor, not explaining why, but just telling them to stay in their chambers that night and not open the door for anyone. Chapter 33 Caltaine pinched her cheeks as she emerged from the dressing room. Her servant sprayed perfume, and the young woman gulped down sugar water before putting her hand on the door. She'd been in the midst of smoking a pipe when Duke Parrington had been announced. She'd fled into the dressing room and changed her clothes, hoping the scent wouldn't linger. If he found out about the opium, she could just blame it on the horrible headaches she'd been having lately. Caltaine passed through her bedroom into the foyer, and then into the sitting room. He looked ready for battle, as always.
"Your Grace," she said, curtsying.
The world was foggy around the edges, and her body felt heavy. He kissed her hand when she offered it, his lips soggy against her skin. Their eyes met as he looked up from her hand, and a piece of the world slipped away. How far would she go to secure her position at Dorian's side?
"I hope I didn't disturb you," he said, releasing her hand.
The walls of the room appeared, and then the floor and the ceiling, and she had the distinct feeling that she was trapped in a box, a lovely cage filled with tapestries and cushions.
"I was only napping, my lord," she said, sitting down.
He sniffed, and Caltaine would have felt immensely nervous were it not for the drug curling around her mind.
"To what do I owe the pleasure of this unexpected visit?"
"I wished to inquire after you. I didn't see you at dinner."
Parrington crossed his arms, arms that looked capable of crushing her skull.
"I was indisposed."
She resisted the urge to rest her too heavy head on the couch. He said something to her, but she found that her ears had stopped hearing. His skin seemed to harden and glaze over, and his eyes became unforgiving marble orbs. Even the thinning hair was frozen in stone. She gaped as the white mouth continued to move, revealing a throat of caved marble.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm not feeling well."
"Shall I fetch you water?"
The Duke stood.
"Or shall I go?"
"No,"
she said, almost crying out. Her heart twitched.
"What I mean is, I'm well enough to enjoy your company, but you must forgive my absent-mindedness."
"I wouldn't call you absent-minded, Lady Caltaine," he said, sitting down. "You're one of the cleverest women I've met. His Highness told me the same thing yesterday."
Caltaine's spine snapped and straightened. She saw Dorian's face and the crown that sat upon his head.
"The prince said that? About me?"
The Duke put a hand on her knee, stroking it with his thumb.
"Of course," then Lady Lillian interrupted before he could say more.
Her head spun.
"Why was she with him?"
"I don't know. I wish it were otherwise."
She must do something, something to stop this. The girl moved fast, too fast for her maneuvering. Lillian had snared the crown prince in her net, and now Caltaine must cut him free. Parrington could do it. He could make Lillian disappear and never be found. No, Lillian was a lady, and a man with as much honor as Parrington would never harm one of noble birth. Or would he? Skeletons danced in circles around her head. But what if he thought Lady Lillian weren't a lady?
Her headache flared to life with a sudden burst that sucked the air from her lungs.
I had the same reaction, she said, rubbing her temple. It's hard to believe someone as disreputable as the Lady Lillian won the heart of the prince.
Maybe the headaches would stop once she was at Dorian's side.
Perhaps it would do some good if someone spoke to His Highness.
Disreputable?
I heard from someone that her background is not as pure as it should be.
What have you heard? Parrington demanded. Kaltain played with a jewel hanging from her bracelet.
I didn't give specifics, but some of the nobility don't believe her to be a worthy companion of anyone in this court. I'd like to learn more about the Lady Lillian, wouldn't you? It's our duty as loyal subjects of the crown to protect our prince from such forces.
Indeed it is, the Duke said quietly.
Something wild and foreign issued a cry within her, shattering through the pain in her head, and thoughts of poppies and cages faded away.
She must do what was necessary to save the crown, and her future.
Selena looked up from an ancient book of wordmark theories as the door creaked open, the hinges squealing loud enough to wake the dead. Her heart skipped a beat, and she tried to appear as casual as possible. But it was not Dorian Havilliard who entered, nor was it a ferocious creature. The door finished opening, and Nehemia, clad in a gold-worked wonder, stood before her. She didn't look at Selena, nor did she move as she stood in the doorway. Her eyes were upon the floor, and rivers of coal ran down her cheeks. Nehemia? Selena asked, getting to her feet. What happened to the play? Nehemia's shoulders rose and fell. Slowly, she lifted her head, revealing red-rimmed eyes.
I didn't know where else to go, she said in Eelway.
Selena found breathing a bit difficult as she asked, What happened? It was then that Selena noticed the piece of paper in Nehemia's hands. It trembled in her grasp.
They massacred them, Nehemia whispered,
her eyes wide. She shook her head, as if she were denying her own words.
Selena went still.
Who?
Nehemia let out a strangled sob, and a part of Selena broke at the agony in the sound.
A legion of Otterlin's army captured 500 Eelway rebels, hiding on the border of Oakwald Forest and the Stone Marshes.
Tears dripped from Nehemia's cheeks and onto her white dress. She crumpled the piece of paper in her hand.
My father says they were to go to Calicalla as prisoners of war. But some of the rebels tried to escape on the journey, and...
Nehemia breathed hard, fighting to get the words out.
And the soldiers killed them all as punishment.
Even the children.
Selena's dinner rose in her throat.
500 butchered.
Selena became aware of Nehemia's personal guard standing in the doorway, their eyes gleaming. How many of the rebels had been people that they knew, that Nehemia had somehow helped and protected?
What is the point in being a princess of Eelway if I cannot help my people? Nehemia said. How can I call myself their princess when such things happen?
I'm so sorry, Selena whispered.
As if those words broke the spell that had been holding the princess in place, Nehemia rushed into her arms. Her gold jewelry pressed hard into Selena's skin. Nehemia wept. Unable to say anything, the assassins simply held her, for as long as it took for the pain to ease.
Chapter 34 Selena sat by a window in her bedroom, watching the snow dance in the night air.
Nehemia had long since returned to her own rooms, tears dried and shoulders squared once more. The clock chimed 11, and Selena stretched, but then stopped as pain seized her stomach. She bent over, focusing on her breathing, and waited for the cramp to pass. She'd been like this for over an hour now, and she pulled her blanket tighter around herself, the heat of the roaring fire not adequately reaching her seat by the window. Thankfully, Philippa entered, extending a cup of tea.
Here, child, she said, this will help.
She placed it on the table beside the assassin and rested a hand on the armchair.
Pity what happened to those Eelway rebels,
she said quietly enough that no listening ears might hear.
I can't imagine what the princess must be feeling.
Selena felt anger bubble alongside the pain in her stomach.
She's fortunate to have a good friend like you, though.
Selena touched Philippa's hand.
Thank you.
She grabbed her teacup and hissed, almost dropping it into her lap as the scalding hot cup bit into her hand. Careful now, Philippa chuckled.
I didn't know assassins could be so clumsy. If you need anything, send word. I've had my fair share of monthly pains.
Philippa ruffled Selena's hair and left. Selena would have thanked her again, but another wave of cramping took over, and she leaned forward as the door closed. Her weight gain over the past 3.5 months had allowed for her monthly cycles to return, after near starvation in Endovir had made them vanish.
Selena groaned.
How was she going to train like this? The duel was 4 weeks away. The snowflakes sparkled and shimmered beyond the glass panes of the window, twirling and weaving as they flew to the ground in a waltz that was beyond human comprehension. How could Elena expect her to defeat some evil in this castle, when there was so much more of it out there? What was any of this compared to what was occurring in the other kingdoms? As close as Endovir and Calcula, even. The door to her bedroom opened, and someone approached.
I heard about Nehemia.
It was Kaol.
What are you... Isn't it late for you to be here? She asked, pulling the blankets tight.
Are you sick?
I'm indisposed.
Because of what happened to those rebels?
Didn't he get it? Selena grimaced.
No, I'm truly feeling unwell.
It makes me sick, too,
Kaol murmured, glaring at the floor.
All of it.
And after seeing Endovir, he rubbed his face as if he could clear away the memories of it.
500 people, he whispered.
Stunned at what he was admitting, she could only watch.
Listen, he began, and started to pace. I know that I'm sometimes aloof with you, and I know you complain about it to Dorian, but...
He turned to her.
It's a good thing that you befriended the princess, and I appreciate your honesty and unwavering friendship with her. I know there are rumors about Nehemia's connection to the rebels in Ilway, but I'd like to think that if my country was conquered, I would stop at nothing to win back my people's freedom, too.
She would have replied were it not for the deep pain that wrapped around her lower spine and the sudden churning in her stomach.
I might, he started, looking at the window. I might have been wrong.
The world began to spin and tilt, and Selena closed her eyes. She'd always had horrible cramping, usually accompanied by nausea, but she wouldn't vomit.
Not right now.
Kaol, she began, putting a hand over her mouth as nausea swelled and took control.
It's just that I take great pride in my job, he continued.
Kaol, she said again. Oh, she was going to vomit.
And you're Otterland's assassin. But I was wondering if you wanted to...
Kaol, she warned. As he pivoted, Selena vomited all over the floor. He made a disgusted noise, jumping back a foot. Tears sprang up as the bitter, sharp taste filled her mouth. She hung over her knees, letting drool and bile spill on the floor.
Are you... By the word, you're really sick, aren't you?
He called for a servant, helping her from the chair. The world was clearer now. What had he been asking?
Come on, let's get you into bed.
I'm not ill like that, she groaned. He sat on the bed, peeling back the blanket. A servant entered, frowning at the mess on the floor, and shouted for help.
Then in what way?
Her face was so hot she thought it would melt onto the floor. Oh, you idiot! My monthly cycles finally came back. His face suddenly matched hers, and he stepped away, dragging a hand through his short brown hair.
Then I'll take my leave, he stammered, and bowed.
Selena raised an eyebrow, and then, despite herself, smiled as he left the room as quickly as his feet could go without running, tripping slightly in the doorway as he staggered into the rooms beyond. Selena looked at the servants cleaning.
I'm so sorry,
she started, but they waved her off. Embarrassed and aching, the assassin climbed farther onto her bed and nestled beneath the covers, hoping sleep would soon come. But sleep wouldn't soon come, and a while later the door opened again, and someone laughed. I intercepted Kaol, and he informed me of your condition. You'd think a man in his position wouldn't be so squeamish, especially after examining all of those corpses. Selena opened an eye and frowned as Dorian sat on her bed.
I'm in a state of absolute agony, and I can't be bothered.
It can't be that bad, he said, fishing a deck of cards from his jacket. Want to play?
I already told you that I don't feel well.
You look fine to me.
He skillfully shuffled the deck.
Just one game.
Don't you pay people to entertain you?
He glowered, breaking the deck. You should be honored by my company.
I'd be honored if you would leave.
For someone who relies on my good graces, you're very bold.
Bold? I've barely begun.
Lying on her side, she curled her knees to her chest. He laughed, pocketing the deck of cards. Your new canine companion is doing well, if you wish to know. She moaned into her pillow.
Go away, I feel like dying.
No fair maiden should die alone, he said, putting a hand on hers. Shall I read to you in your final moments? What story would you like?
She snatched her hand back. How about the story of the idiotic prince who won't leave the assassin alone?
Oh, I love that story. It has such a happy ending, too. Why, the assassin was really feigning her illness in order to get the prince's attention. Who would have guessed it? Such a clever girl. And the bedroom scene is so lovely. It's worth reading through all of their ceaseless banter.
Out, out, out! Leave me be and go womanize someone else.
She grabbed a book and chucked it at him. He caught it before it broke his nose, and her eyes widened.
I didn't mean... That wasn't an attack, it was a joke. I didn't mean to actually hurt you, Your Highness, she said in a jumble.
I'd hope that Otterlin's assassin would choose to attack me in a more dignified manner. At least with a sword or a knife, though preferably not in the back. She clutched her belly and bent over. Sometimes she hated being a woman. It's Dorian, by the way, not Your Highness.
Very well.
Say it.
Say what?
Say my name. Say very well, Dorian. She rolled her eyes.
If it pleases your magnanimous holiness, I shall call you by your first name.
Magnanimous holiness? Oh, I like that one. A ghost of a smile appeared on her face, and Dorian looked down at the book. This isn't one of the books that I sent you. I don't even own books like these. She laughed weakly and took the tea from the servant as she approached.
Of course you don't, Dorian. I had the maid send for a copy today.
Sunset's Passions, he read, and opened the book to a random page to read aloud. His hands gently caressed her ivory silky His eyes widened. By the word, do you actually read this rubbish? What happened to symbols and power and Ilway customs and culture? She finished her drink, the ginger tea easing her stomach.
You may borrow it when I'm done. If you read it, your literary experience will be complete. And, she added with a coy smile, it will give you some creative ideas of things to do with your lady friends.
He hissed through his teeth. I will not read this. She took the book from his hands, leaning back.
Then I suppose you're just like Kaol.
Kaol? He asked, falling into the trap. You asked Kaol to read this?
He refused, of course, she lied. He said it wasn't right for him to read the sort of material if I gave it to him.
Dorian snatched the book from her hands. Give me that, you demon woman. I'll not have you matching us against each other.
He glanced once more at the novel, then turned it over, concealing the title.
She smiled and resumed watching the falling snow. It was blisteringly cold now, and even the fire could not warm the blasts of wind that crept through the cracks of her balcony doors. She felt Dorian watching her, and not in the cautious way that Kaol sometimes watched her. Rather, Dorian just seemed to be watching her because he enjoyed watching her. And she enjoyed watching him, too. Dorian didn't realize he'd been transfixed by her until she straightened and demanded, "What are you staring at?"
"You're beautiful,"
Dorian said before he could think. "Don't be stupid!"
"Did I offend you?"
His blood pumped through him in a strange rhythm.
"No,"
she said, and quickly faced the window. Dorian watched her face turn redder and redder. He'd never known an attractive woman for so long without courting her, save for Caltaine, and he couldn't deny that he was aching to learn what Selena's lips felt like, what her bare skin smelled like, how she'd react to the touch of his fingers along her body. The week surrounding Yulmas was a time of relaxation, a time to celebrate the carnal pleasures that kept one warm on a winter's night. Women wore their hair down. Some even refused to don a corset. It was a holiday to feast on the fruits of the harvest and those of the flesh. Naturally, he looked forward to it every year. But now... now he had a sinking feeling in his stomach. How could he celebrate when word had just arrived of what his father's soldiers had done to those Eelway rebels? They hadn't spared a single life. 500 people, all dead. How could he ever look Nehemia in the face again? And how could he someday rule a country whose soldiers had been trained to have so little compassion for human life? Dorian's mouth went dry. Selena was from Terrasen, another conquered country, and his father's first conquest. It was a miracle Selena bothered to acknowledge his existence, or perhaps she'd spent so long in Otterlin that she'd stopped caring. Somehow, Dorian didn't think that was the case. Not when she had the 3 giant scars on her back to forever remind her of his father's brutality.
"Is there something the matter?"
she asked. Cautiously, curiously, as if she cared. He took a deep breath and walked to the window, unable to look at her. The glass was cold beneath his hand, and he watched the snowflakes come crashing down to earth.
"You must hate me," he murmured.
"Hate me and my court for our frivolity and mindlessness when so many horrible things are going on outside of this city. I heard about those butchered rebels and I'm ashamed,"
he said, leaning his head against the window. He heard her rise and then slump into a chair. The words came out in a river, one flowing after the other, and he couldn't stop himself from speaking.
"I understand why you have such ease when killing my kind, and I don't blame you for it."
"Dorian,"
she said gently. The world outside the castle was dark.
"I know you'll never tell me,"
he continued, voicing what he had wanted to say for some time.
"But I know something terrible happened to you when you were young. Something perhaps of my father's own doing. You have a right to hate Otterlin for seizing control of Terrasen as it did, for taking all of the countries, and the country of your friend."
He swallowed, his eyes stinging.
"You won't believe me, but I don't want to be a part of that. I can't call myself a man when I allow my father to encourage such unforgivable atrocities. Yet even if I pleaded for clemency on behalf of the conquered kingdoms, he wouldn't listen. Not in this world. This is the world where I only picked you to be my champion because I knew it would annoy my father."
She shook her head, but he kept going.
"But if I had refused to sponsor a champion, my father would have seen it as a sign of dissent. And I'm not yet enough of a man to stand against him like that. So I chose Otterlin's assassin to be my champion, because the choice of my champion was the only choice I had."
Yes, it was all clear now.
"Life shouldn't be like this,"
he said,
their eyes meeting as he gestured at the room.
And the world shouldn't be like this."
The assassin was silent,
listening to the throbbing of her heart before she spoke.
"I don't hate you,"
she said in little more than a whisper. He dropped into the chair across from her and put his head in a hand.
He seemed remarkably lonely. "And I don't think you're like them. I'm sorry if I've hurt you. I'm joking most of the time."
"Hurt me?" he said. "You haven't hurt me. You've made things a little more entertaining."
She cocked her head.
"Just a little?"
"Maybe a tad more than that."
He stretched out his legs.
"Oh, if only you could come to the Yulmas ball with me. Be grateful you can't attend."
"Why can't I attend? And what's the Yulmas ball?" He groaned.
"Nothing all that special. Just a masked ball that happens to be on Yulmas." and I think you know exactly why you can't come.
You and Kay all really delight in ruining any fun I might have, don't you? I like attending parties.
When you're my father's champion, you can attend all the balls you want.
She made a face. He wanted to tell her then that if he could, he would have asked her to go with him, that he wanted to spend time with her, that he thought of her even when they were apart, but he knew she would have laughed.
The clock chimed midnight.
I should probably go, he said, stretching his arms. I have a day of council meetings to look forward to tomorrow, and I don't think Duke Parrington will be pleased if I'm half asleep for all of them.
Selena smirked. Be sure to give the Duke my warmest regards.
There was no way she'd forgotten how the Duke had treated her that first day in Endovier. Dorian hadn't forgotten it either. And the thought of the Duke treating her like that again made him burn with cold rage.
Without thinking, he leaned down and kissed her cheek. She stiffened as his mouth touched her skin, and though the kiss was brief, he breathed in the scent of her.
Pulling away was surprisingly hard.
Rest well, Selena, he said.
Good night, Dorian. As he left, he wondered why she suddenly looked so sad, and why she'd pronounced his name not with tenderness, but with resignation. Selena stared at the moonlight as it streamed across the ceiling. A masked ball on Yulmus. Even if it was the most corrupt and ostentatious court in Aurelia, it sounded dreadfully romantic. And of course, she wasn't allowed to go. She let out a long sigh through her nose and tucked her hands beneath her head. Was that what Kaol had wanted to ask her before she vomited? A true invitation to the ball?
She shook her head. No, the last thing he'd ever do would be to invite her to a royal ball. Besides, both of them had more important things to worry about. Like whoever was killing the champions. Perhaps she should have sent word to him about Kane's strange behavior earlier that afternoon.
Selena closed her eyes and smiled. She could think of no nicer Yulmus gift than for Kane to be found dead the next morning. Still, as the clock marked the passing hours, Selena kept her vigil, waiting, wondering what truly lurked in the castle, and unable to stop thinking of those 500 dead Ilway rebels, buried in some unmarked grave.
Chapter 35. The next evening, Kaol Westfall stood on the second floor of the castle, looking over the courtyard. Below him, two figures slowly wove through the hedges. Selena's white cloak made her easy to spot, and Dorian could always be noticed by the empty circle of space around him. He should be down there, a foot behind, watching them, making sure she didn't seize Dorian and use him to escape. Logic and years of experience screamed at him to be with them, even though six guards trailed them. She was deceitful, cunning, vicious. But he couldn't make his feet move. With each day, he felt the barriers melting. He let them melt. Because of her genuine laugh. Because he caught her one afternoon sleeping with her face in the middle of a book. Because he knew that she would win. She was a criminal, a prodigy at killing, a queen of the underworld. And yet she was just a girl, sent at 17 to Endovier. It made him sick every time he thought about it. He'd been training with the guards at 17, but he'd still lived here, still had a roof over his head, and good food and friends. Dorian had been in the middle of courting Rosamund when he was that age, not caring about anything. But she, at 17, had gone to a death camp, and survived. He wasn't sure if he could survive Endovier, let alone during the winter months. He'd never been whipped, never seen anyone die. He'd never been cold and starving. Selena laughed at something Dorian said. She'd survived Endovier, and yet could still laugh. While it terrified him to see her down there, a hand's breadth from Dorian's unprotected throat, what terrified him even more was that he trusted her, and he didn't know what that meant about himself. Selena walked between the hedges and couldn't help the smile that spread across her face. They walked closely, but not close enough to touch. Dorian had found her just moments after dinner and invited her for a walk. In fact, he'd showed up so quickly after the servants cleared away her food that she might have thought he'd been waiting outside.
course, it was due entirely to the cold that she longed to link arms with him and absorb his warmth. The white fur-lined cloak did little to keep the frigid air from freezing all of her. She could only imagine how Nehemia would react to such temperatures. But after learning about the fate of those rebels, the princess was spending most of her time in her rooms and had declined Selena's repeated offers to go for walks. It had been over 3 weeks since her last encounter with Elena, and she hadn't seen or heard her at all, despite the 3 tests she'd had, the most exciting of which being an obstacle course, which she passed with only a few minor scratches and bruises. Unfortunately, Paylor hadn't done so well, and had been sent home at long last. But he'd been lucky. 3 other competitors had died. All found in forgotten hallways. All mutilated beyond recognition. Even Selena had taken to jumping at every strange sound. There were only 6 of them left now. Kane, Grave, Knox, a soldier, and Renault. A vicious mercenary who'd stepped up to replace Varen as Kane's right-hand man. Not surprisingly, Renault's favorite new activity was taunting Selena. She shoved thoughts of the murders aside as they strode past a fountain, and she caught Dorian giving her an admiring glance from the corner of his eye. Of course, she hadn't been thinking of Dorian when she chose such a fine lavender gown to wear tonight, or when she made sure her hair was so carefully arranged, or that her white gloves were spotless. "What to do now?" Dorian said. "We've walked twice around the garden."
"Don't you have princely duties to attend to?"
Selena winced as a gust of icy wind blew back her hood and froze her ears. When she recovered the hood, she found Dorian staring at her throat.
"What?"
she asked, pulling her cloak tightly around her.
"You always wear that necklace," he said.
"Is it another gift?"
Though she wore gloves, he glanced at her hand, where the amethyst ring always sat, and the spark died from his eyes.
"No."
She covered the amulet with her hand. "I found it in my jewelry box and liked the look of it, you insufferably territorial man."
"It's very old-looking."
"Been robbing the royal coffer, have you?" He winked, but she didn't feel any warmth behind it.
"No,"
she repeated sharply. Even though a necklace wouldn't protect her from the murderer, and even though Elena had some agenda she was being cagey about, Selena wouldn't take it off. Its presence somehow comforted her in the long hours she sat up, watching her door. He continued staring at her hand until she lowered it from her throat. He studied the necklace.
"When I was a boy, I used to read tales about the dawn of Otterlin. Gavin was my hero. I must have read every legend regarding the war with Erewhon."
"How can he be that smart? He can't have figured it out so quickly."
She tried her best to look innocently interested.
"And?"
"Elena, first queen of Otterlin, had a magical amulet. In the battle with the Dark Lord, Gavin and Elena found themselves defenseless against him. He was about to kill the princess when a spirit appeared and gave her the necklace. And when she put it on, Erewhon couldn't harm her. She saw the Dark Lord for what he was and called him by his true name. It surprised him so much that he became distracted, and Gavin slew him."
Dorian looked to the ground.
"They called her necklace the Eye of Elena. It's been lost for centuries."
How strange it was to hear Dorian, son of the man who had banished and outlawed all traces of magic, talking about powerful amulets. Still, she laughed as best she could.
"And you think this trinket is the Eye? I think it'd be dust by now."
"I suppose not," he said,
and vigorously rubbed his arms for warmth. "But I've seen a few illustrations of the Eye, and your necklace looks like it. Perhaps it's a replica."
"Perhaps."
She quickly found another subject. "When's your brother arriving?" He looked skyward.
"I'm lucky. We received a letter this morning that snows in the mountains prevented Holland from coming home. He's stuck at school until after his spring term, and he's beside himself."
"Your poor mother," Selena said, half smiling.
"She'll probably send servants to deliver his Yulmus presents, regardless of the storm."
Selena didn't hear him, and though they talked for a good hour afterward, meandering through the grounds, she couldn't get her heart to calm. Elena had to have known someone would recognize her amulet, and if this was the real thing, The king could kill her on the spot for wearing not only an heirloom of his house, but something of power. Yet again, she could only wonder what Elena's motives actually were. Selena glanced from her book to the tapestry on the wall. The chest of drawers remained where she'd shoved it in front of the passageway. She shook her head and returned to her book. Though she scanned the lines, none of the words registered. What did Elena want with her? Dead queens usually didn't come back to give orders to the living. Selena clenched her book. It wasn't like she wasn't fulfilling Elena's command to win, either. She would have fought this hard to become the king's champion anyway. And as for finding and defeating the evil in the castle, well, now that it seemed tied to who was murdering the champions, how could she not try to figure out where it was coming from? A door shut somewhere inside her rooms, and Selena jumped, the book flying from her hands. She grabbed the brass candlestick beside her bed, ready to leap off the mattress, but lowered it as Philippa's humming filtered through the doors to her bedroom. She groaned as she climbed out of the warmth of her bed to retrieve her book. It had fallen under the bed, and Selena knelt upon the icy floor, straining to reach the book. She couldn't feel it anywhere, so she grabbed the candle. She saw the book immediately, tucked against the back wall, but as her fingers grappled onto the cover, a glimmer of candlelight traced a white line across the floor beneath her bed. Selena yanked the book back to her and stood with a jolt. Her hands trembled as she pushed the bed out of position, her feet slipping on the half-frozen floor. It moved slowly, but eventually she had shifted it enough to see what had been sketched onto the floor beneath. Everything inside of her turned to ice. Word marks. Dozens of word marks had been drawn onto the floor with chalk. They formed a giant spiral, with a large mark in its center. Selena stumbled back, slamming into her dresser. What was this? She ran a shaking hand through her hair, staring at the center mark. She'd seen that mark. It had been etched on one side of Varen's body. Her stomach rising in her throat, she rushed to her nightstand and grabbed the pitcher of water atop it. Without a thought, she tossed the water onto the marks, then raced to her bathing chamber to draw more water. When the water had finished loosening the chalk, she took a towel and scrubbed the floor until her back ached and her legs and hands were frozen. Then, only then, did she throw on a pair of pants and a tunic and head out the door. Thankfully, the guards didn't say anything when she asked them to escort her to the library at midnight. They remained in the main room of the library as she set off through the stacks, heading toward the musty, forgotten alcove where she'd found the majority of the books on the word marks. She couldn't walk fast enough, and kept looking over her shoulder. Was she next? What did any of it mean? She wrung her fingers. She rounded a corner, not 10 stacks from the alcove, and came to a halt. Nehemia, seated at a small desk, stared at her with wide eyes. Selena put a hand on her racing heart. "Damn," she said. "You gave me a fright." Nehemia smiled, but not very well. Selena cocked her head as she approached the table. "What are you doing here?" Nehemia demanded in Eelway. "I couldn't sleep." She shifted her eyes to the princess's book. That wasn't the book they used during their lessons. No, it was a thick, aging book, crammed with dense lines of text. "What are you reading?" Nehemia slammed the book shut and stood. "Nothing." Selena observed her face. Her lips were pursed, and the princess lifted her chin. "I thought you couldn't read at that level yet." Nehemia tucked the book into the crook of her arm. "Then you're like every ignorant fool in this castle, Lillian," she said with perfect pronunciation in the common tongue. Not giving her a chance to reply, the princess strode away. Selena watched her go. It didn't make sense. Nehemia couldn't read books that advanced, not when she still stumbled through lines of text. And Nehemia never spoke with that kind of flawless accent. And in the shadows behind the desk, a piece of paper had fallen between the wood and the stone wall. Easing it out, Selena unfolded the crumpled paper. She whirled around to the direction where Nehemia had disappeared. Her throat constricting, Selena tucked the piece of paper into her pocket and hurried back toward the great room, the word mark drawn on the paper burning a hole in her clothing. Selena rushed down a staircase, then strode along a hallway lined with books.
No, Nehemia couldn't have played her like that. Nehemia wouldn't have lied day after day about how little she knew. Nehemia had been the one to tell her that the etchings in the garden were word marks. She knew what they were. She'd warned her to stay away from the word marks again and again, because Nehemia was her friend, because Nehemia had wept when her people had been murdered, because she'd come to her for comfort. But Nehemia came from a conquered kingdom, and the king of Otterland had ripped the crown off her father's head and stripped his title from him. And the people of Eelwe were being kidnapped in the night and sold into slavery, right along with the rebels that rumor claimed Nehemia supported so fiercely. And 500 Eelwe citizens had just been butchered. Selena's eyes stung as she spotted the guards loitering in armchairs in the great room. Nehemia had every reason to deceive them, to plot against them, to tear apart this stupid competition and send everyone into a tizzy. Who better to target than the criminals living here? No one would miss them, but the fear would seep into the castle. But why would Nehemia plot against her?
Chapter 36.
Days passed without seeing Nehemia, and Selena kept her mouth shut about the incident to Kaol or Dorian or anyone who visited her chambers. She couldn't confront Nehemia. Not without more concrete proof, not without ruining everything. So she spent her spare time researching the word marks, desperate for a way to decipher them, to find those symbols, to learn what it all meant, and how it connected to the killer and the killer's beast. Amidst her worrying, another test passed without incident or embarrassment, though she couldn't say the same for the soldier who'd been sent home, and she kept up her intense training with Kaol and the other champions. There were 5 of them left now. The final test was 3 days away, and the duel 2 days after that. Selena awoke on Yulemas morning and relished the silence. There was something inherently peaceful about the day, despite the darkness of her encounter with Nehemia. For the moment, the whole castle had quieted to hear the falling snow. Frost laced each window pane, a fire already crackled in the fireplace, and shadows of snowflakes drifted across the floor. It was as peaceful and lovely a winter morning as she could imagine. She wouldn't ruin it with thoughts of Nehemia, or of the duel, or of the ball she wasn't allowed to attend tonight. No, it was Yulemas morning, and she would be happy. It didn't feel like a holiday to celebrate the darkness that gave birth to the spring light, nor did it feel like a holiday to celebrate the birth of the goddess's firstborn son. It was simply a day when people were more courteous, looked twice at a beggar in the street. Remembered that love was a living thing. Selena smiled and rolled over, but something got in her way. It was crinkly and harsh against her face, and had the distinct odor of... candy? A large paper bag sat on a pillow, and she found that it was filled with all sorts of confectionery goodies. There was no note, not even a name scribbled on the bag. With a shrug and glowing eyes, Selena pulled out a handful of sweets. Oh, how she adored candy. Selena issued a jolly laugh and crammed some of the candy into her mouth. One by one, she chewed through the assortment, and she closed her eyes and breathed in deeply as she tasted all the flavors and textures. When she finally stopped chewing, her jaw